Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. On this program, we're going to expose many of the misconceptions associated with religion, with politics, with military and economic schemes. So instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to try to explain why these things are happening and what it means to you and to those you love. Then during our second hour, as usual, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah teaching and by way of His one and only covenant. Today's program, we're going to continue to discuss the letter that was sent to me at Prophet of Doom and the many responses that the Christian wrote to it. Because when we examine his defenses of Christianity, we will be able to explore what Yahweh actually had to say. Now, if you are rational, I promise this will be the best part of today's program. If you're religious, this will drive you crazy. Or maybe it'll drive you away from your religion, which would be a good thing. Our phone number, if you would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that I have to say today, is 877-300-7645. Also, for those who are seeking verification of anything that is presented here today, or on any one of our programs, I invite you to go to introtogod.org, yadaya.com, prophetofdoom.net, or questioningpaul.com. Now, over this past weekend, I had the opportunity to talk with a number of young naval officers. I was attending a wedding in Rhode Island, and during the rehearsal dinner and again during the reception, there were a number of young naval officers and Marines who were attending because the groom was a lieutenant in the U.S. Navy. And what was interesting about this is that we talked openly about the actual nature of the U.S. military and its most two most recent wars, Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, one of the things that we talked about was the sheer size of the U.S. military and how there is no question, but it's going to be cut hugely. You know, when Mitt Romney was saying that he wasn't going to cut our defense so that we could maintain the most substantial defense and the capability in the world, well, the fact of the matter is it's going to be cut. He knows it's going to be cut. It has to be cut. It will be cut. And it's going to be cut substantially. As a matter of fact, the U.S. Defense Department could be cut by 90%, and we would still have the largest military in the world. Yes, if we cut it by 90%, America would still have the largest and most expensive military in the world. Beyond that, if America were to bring all of its troops home and actually protect its borders, we would be doing a service for this country. And economically, if we weren't squandering $650 to $750 billion a year en route to our $1.5 trillion deficits, we would be vastly more secure because we would not be mortgaging our children's future. They realized that and agreed with it, by the way, that the U.S. military needs to be cut, that it is way, way too large. We talked about aircraft carriers and projecting a force, and they recognized that if our military were kept at home and protected America's borders, then it would be doing the job that it was called to do, and that we get ourselves in trouble because we have the ability to project a force. We do. And that causes us to invade other nations. They recognized that there was nothing gained and a lot lost in Afghanistan and Iraq. One young woman, particularly bright, was attending the war college, and the attendees, all U.S. soldiers, continually asked the presenters to apply their methods and ideologies to Afghanistan and Iraq, even to Vietnam, to discuss current wars. They wouldn't do it. Of course, they wouldn't do it because we lost those wars, because we squandered blood and coin. In those words, they wouldn't even discuss them. It's interesting, isn't it? But during this whole discussion with them, we also moved into the area of drones and the recognition that drones lower the threshold over life and death, over engaging, cause the President of the United States to think he's God, that he alone has the power over life and death, completely and utterly forsaking the U.S. Constitution. And they recognized that was true, and they knew that the use of drones thus far had been immoral. And speaking of the U.S. Constitution, they recognized that so long as America stopped infringing with the constitutional right to bear arms, that America wouldn't even need a military because it would be impossible for any country anywhere in the world to invade and occupy the United States. All of that was surprising coming from young officers. You would have thought that they would have been indoctrinated. They knew, by the way, that the spreading of democracy was a bad idea. They did not know, of course, that democracy had only existed twice in the world, both times for improper results in Sparta, the most vicious nation on earth, and as part of the Delian League to create the imposed democracies, becoming a tripwire to protect Greece against Persia. They knew that was wrong. And they knew that they ought not be trying to impose America's will on other nations, that it does not go well, and that we had no chance of prevailing in those countries. Pretty encouraging, coming from those the military has sought to indoctrinate. They also knew that the least free institution on the planet was the U.S. military. Moving on to another story in the news. We find a number of reports now from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, also from heads of state in Europe, that the United States is about to bring the entire world economy down, crashing around everyone's feet. It's called a fiscal cliff. The fiscal cliff, both politicians running for U.S. President, know full well. This cliff is a result of the combination of imposed cuts to the federal budget and primarily the rather drastic increases in taxation. It's going to pull so much money out of the economy that it's going to lead to recession of a greater consequence than we experienced some 4 years ago. And so there is an outcry against this fiscal cliff, which they say is compounding economic uncertainty, freezing business investment, threatening growth. And this now is from the IMF's number two official, and its top-ranking American also echoed those sentiments. They said if nothing is done, the U.S. tax increases and also some of the spending cuts totaling some $600 billion, the equivalent of 4% of the U.S. GDP, will take effect in fiscal 2013. Taxes would rise in 2013 by an average of $3,500 per household. This from Fitch and from the Tax Policy Center says for 90% of Americans. Now, that can't be right unless for the first time in recent history, 50% of Americans who currently pay no tax will be paying tax for the first time. Or they're simply taking an average and recognizing that those who are the most productive will pay an astonishing amount of increased taxes, and the 50% that currently pay no tax will continue to pay no tax. It isn't clear from this reporting, but if you think of $3,500 confiscated from 90% of American families, you have some ideas to how consequential this physical cliff is, and we are headed directly off of that cliff. And there are no plans in either party to resolve this problem. In New York, you may or may not have heard that there is quite an advertising stir taking place primarily in the subway systems. But as a result of these ads, which are rather interesting, the ad campaign, it reads as follows. It's just a real simple statement, and this is what it says. In any war between the civilized man and the savage, support the civilized man. Support Israel. Defeat jihad. And so, with that statement, what we have is Jewish and Christian groups now unveiling a number of ad campaigns to counter what they claim is hateful speech towards Muslims. The new ads tout religious tolerance. Now, religions are intolerant. They are intolerant by nature. Christianity was so intolerant of any rival that even when, like, for example, the Anabaptists were seen as a rival to Roman Catholicism's interpretation of Christianity, they went to war and tried to annihilate the Anabaptists. And it's so intolerant that many of those who risked their lives sailing to the New World did so because of religious intolerance of Christianity throughout Europe. Much of the medieval times was such that if your interpretation of Christianity was different than the churches, you were tortured, you were imprisoned, you were murdered. Islam exists to eliminate all other religions. It is a war against all humankind. It is as intolerant as any thing ever conceived. And so this notion that religions are promoting tolerance is purely hypocritical. You know, if you read the Talmud, the scriptures of the Jewish religion, if you read the Talmud, they are incredibly hateful and intolerant of goyim. And they are, it's kind of like Islam in a way too, that a Jew who does not surrender to the rabbinical edicts is the most vile person of all. Just like a Muslim who is not a jihadist, according to Allah, becomes a hypocrite. Someone that Allah orders good Muslims to kill so he can torture them in the hottest places of hell. Well, we're going to return to the ad and what Islam actually says about jihad. Shattering Myths again. If you would like to challenge anything that you hear in this program, you're invited to do so at 877-300-7645. So as we were talking about this, we have religious groups, Jewish and Christians, that are trying to counter words that they claim are hateful towards Muslims, and that they are touting religious tolerance. And what I've shared with you up to this point is that there is no such thing as a tolerant religion, maybe with the exception of Hinduism. Even socialist secular humanism, the religion of man, is intolerant. It's killed more people who disagree with it in the last 150 years than all religions combined. The only exception that I'm aware of a religion that is genuinely tolerant is Hinduism. They've got about 10 billion gods, and so they're pretty much tolerant of anything in Hinduism. But apart from Hinduism, tolerance is not a religious virtue. By the way, tolerance isn't a godly virtue either, nor is animosity to hateful speech. God is extremely hateful when it comes to those who are leading his children away from him. If you are teaching religious lies, promoting religious lies, God not only hates you, he despises what you say and what you represent. And so the only way to love is actually to hate that which is hostile to those you love. So anyway, one of the ads says, "Stop bigotry against our Muslim neighbors." One reads, "Support peace in word and deed." Well, if you want to be assured that there will be no peace, then be tolerant of those who would wage war. If you are supportive of jihad, then you will make it easier for jihadists to kill. So the opposite of what the religious slogan reads is what is actually true. As for bigotry, a religion is not a race. Therefore, to say that we should oppose jihad, that we should oppose even Islam, is not bigotry. We ought to use words intelligently. You are supposed to come to understand, to expose and condemn things that are untrue. Attacking something that is false, that is misleading, that is violent, that is unmerciful, as is Islam and jihad, is not bigotry. It is the antithesis of that. Well, the campaigns are in response to this controversial ad that is displayed in 10 of the city's more than 400 subway stations. And this is what, you read the ad. In any war between the civilized man and the savage, support the civilized man. Now, that's really not an appropriate depiction of the world as we see it. It then continues, support Israel, defeat jihad. There are enemies of Israel that are not savages. There are supporters of Israel who are not civilized. To frame the issue that way is inappropriate. It is not based on evidence, reason, it's not rational, it's not helpful. Now, it is true that the world's most savage expansion of a religious idea occurred with the creation of Islam. Prior to Muhammad conceiving Islam, there was no account of Arabs leaving Arabia to torment, to terrorize, to rob, to murder, to rape anyone. After Muhammad's creation of Islam, there was a sea of blood that rose out of the land of the Arab Peninsula, now Muslims, as they savaged much of the world, raping and plundering and murdering their way to wealth and prosperity. It was amongst the most barbaric time in all of human history. So, is Islam savage? Yeah. Yeah, are the foes of Islam's civilized? No. And so this idea that everyone who is opposed to Israel is a savage and those who are supportive of Israel are civilized is not necessarily true. As for jihad, you know, when you have a religious term that speaks of armed war against all humankind, that's a problem. It's not a problem for exposing or condemning it. It's a problem for the religion. And so long as it is defeating jihad that is the purpose of the advertisement, then they are on solid ground. Now, interesting to note, the only reason these ads are in these 10 stations is because a New York metropolitan judge overturned the Transportation Authority and said they have to be put there because they are a protected aspect of free speech, protected under the First Amendment. We'll return to this story in a moment. Hello, I am Yada. Welcome back to Shattering Myths, 877-300-7645. Scott mentioned to me during the break that the organization that put up the those posters, which I'm critical of, I don't have any criticism of defeating jihad. I have no criticism of supporting Israel. But I do have criticism when you go to battle against such things in a deceitful way or in a way that is not credible. And as I shared with you, to suggest that those who oppose Israel are savages and those who support Israel are civilized is inappropriate. Well, there's something else inappropriate about these ads on these 10 billboard stations. They actually printed the ads using the logo of the transit department to make it appear as if it was the transit department themselves, the Department of Transportation, that was the sponsor of the ads. It reminds me of the Innocence of Muslim movie that caused so much ruckus. While it is good to expose and condemn Muhammad for being a pervert, for being a sexual predator, for being a ruthless terrorist, if you're going to do that sort of thing, you have to do so credibly. And the movie is incredible. It is a mockery in the sense of the acting and dialogue. So, and the production value as well. It's important to be credible. And to deceive, to beguile, to do things under false premise is not the way to convey the truth. My suggestion instead is to quote from the Quran and Hadith if you wish to expose and condemn jihad. Well, the official Quran for the English-speaking market, the one presented by the Fahd family, it's called the Fahd Foundation. They are the dictators over Saudi Arabia, in which Mecca lies. They are responsible for the Noble Quran, which is the most literal translation of the Quran available in English. They are responsible for about 80% of the mosques built in the world today. In it, right below Surah Quran 2190, the Quran's first mention of jihad, you will find this passage. Jihad is holy fighting in Allah's cause, with full force of numbers and weaponry. It is given the utmost importance in Islam and is one of its pillars. By jihad, Islam is established. Allah's word is made superior, which means only Allah has the right to be worshipped. And Islam is propagated. By abandoning jihad, Islam is destroyed, and Muslims fall into an inferior positions. Their honor is lost, their lands are stolen, their rule and authority vanish. Jihad is an obligatory duty in Islam on every Muslim. He who tries to escape from this duty dies with one of the qualities of a hypocrite. End quote. I shared with you briefly that Allah in the ninth surah defines a hypocrite as a peaceful Muslim. And he says, of the hypocrites, I want them killed so that I can torture them in the hottest places in hell. So if a Muslim pretends to be peaceful, then they are a hypocrite. They cease to be a Muslim by Allah's definition. There is no such thing as a peaceful Muslim according to the Quran. And according to the Quran, all good Muslims are jihadists. And according to the Quran, jihad is fighting in Allah's cause with full force of numbers and weaponry. Quran 5:51 says, O believers, do not hold Jews and Christians as your allies. They are allies of one another, and anyone who makes them his friends is one of them. Quran 2:10 says, as for those who deny Islam, they shall be faggots for the fires of hell. Eshaq 3:27 reads, and Allah said, a prophet must slaughter before collecting captives. A slaughtered enemy is driven from the land. Muhammad, you craved the desires of this world, its goods, and the ransom captives would bring. But Allah desires killing them to manifest the religion. Bukhari, you will find the Prophet had their men killed and their children and women taken captive. In Quran 3:26, we find Allah made the Jews leave their homes by terrorizing them, so that you killed some and made many captive. And he made you inherit their lands, their homes, and their wealth. He gave you a country you had not traversed before. The following words all come directly out of the Quran's Spoils of War surah. Allah has sent you from your homes to fight for the cause. Allah wished to confirm the truth by his words. Wipe the infidels out to the last. I shall fill the hearts of the infidels with terror. So smite them on their necks and every joint and incapacitate them, for they are opposed to Allah and his apostle. Whoever opposes us should know that Allah is severe in retribution. The infidels will taste the torment of hell. So when you meet them in battle, do not retreat. For all who turn away from fighting will bring the wrath of Allah upon themselves, and their abode will be hell. It will not be you who killed them, but Allah who did so. You did not throw what you threw. Allah did to bring out the best in the faithful. So fight them until all opposition ends, and Islam is the only religion. And Allah was just getting warmed up. He continued in the same surah, if you meet them in battle, inflict such a defeat as would be a lesson for those who would come after them, that they may be warned. Surely the infidels cannot get away. Prepare against them whatever arms and cavalry you can muster, that you may terrorize the enemies of Allah. O Prophet, urge the faithful to fight. If there are 20 among you with determination, they will vanquish 200. If there are 100, then they will kill 1,000 infidels. For they are a people devoid of understanding. The Quran, of course, defines infidels in the first surah as they are surely infidels who say that Christ is God. So as not to be accused of unfairly singling out a less than peaceful surah from the Quran, listen to how Allah recruits suicide bombers in the fourth surah. Those who barter their life in this world for the next should fight in the way of Allah. Whoever is killed or victorious, a glorious award awaits. Urge the believers to fight, to keep back the might of the infidels, seize them and kill them wherever they are. Muslims who sit idle are not equal to those who fight in Allah's cause with their wealth and with their lives. Allah has exalted those who fight for Islam. The Islamic Sirah proclaims this from Ishaq, our onslaught will not be a weak, faltering affair. We shall fight as long as we live. We will fight you until you turn to Islam, humbly seeking refuge. We will fight not caring whom we meet. We will fight whether we destroy ancient holdings or newly gotten gains. We have mutilated every opponent. We have driven them violently before us at the command of Allah and Islam. We will fight until our religion is established, and we will plunder them, for they must suffer disgrace. For those who have read Prophet of Doom, you know that it is a 1,000-page book, that it is devoted entirely to presenting the words and deeds of Muhammad as they were recorded by the first Muslims in the five oldest and most credible Islamic sources. And you know that the final three quarters of Prophet of Doom is devoted entirely to what the Quran and Hadith have to say about jihad. It is a murderous religion. Rather than taking verses out of context, Prophet of Doom puts them in context. The context of Muhammad's life. It reorders the Quran chronologically, setting it into the context of Muhammad's life, as that life was depicted in the biography of Muhammad by Ishaq and the history of Islam's formation by Tabari, the first two books written about Muhammad and his creation of Islam, both comprised entirely of hadith, of oral reports from Muhammad and his companions. What you find when you study Islam is that from the moment that the Gulf of the Pledge of Aqaba occurred, where Muhammad and his newfound companions from Yathrib, today's Medina, they formed a pledge, and I quote, to wage war against all humankind, that from that moment on, Islam was nothing but vicious. Muhammad led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. He murdered every man within camel ride of Medina. He raped every woman. He enslaved every child. He robbed everyone of their wealth. That is the truth about Islam. It is why we ought to oppose jihad. Speaking of the never-ending nature of jihad, a new report on Afghanistan came out today. It warns that the departure of NATO forces in 2014 would be followed by the government's collapse and by civil war. I've been saying that now for 11 years. The war is not even 11 years old. I've been saying that now for 11 years. It was obvious that George W. Bush was going to invade Afghanistan. It was obvious what was going to happen when we did, that we would not only lose, but we would make a bad situation worse, that we would be repeating all of the mistakes of Vietnam, where it is impossible to tell the friend from foe, where because of the nature of the battle, that every time we dropped a bomb and shot a bullet, we'd be manufacturing 100 more enemy for everyone we killed. And that the puppet government that we would create would be repulsive, and that it would not stand. We will leave Afghanistan, and the moment we leave Afghanistan, the government that we propped up will fall, and it will be as if we were never there, except for all of the lives we snuffed out and all of the wealth that we squandered. In that way, it will be another repeat of Vietnam. The International Crisis Group says that the Afghan police and army are unprepared for security responsibility. Oh, that's not true. It's exactly the opposite of that. They are prepared for what they are best at: robbing, plundering, harassing, killing, and that's what they will continue to do. We'll return to this story and then to a letter that I was sent after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were in the midst of discussing the plight of Afghanistan, something that I predicted 11 years ago, that we would be in this very situation, that we would repeat the error of Vietnam, that we would prop up a government that would be plagued by fraud and that would not have the support of the people, and that we would arm a military that would turn their very guns against us, precisely what has happened in Afghanistan. But, of course, it's worse than that in Afghanistan, because as bad as socialist secular humanism, communism, is in terms of its debauchery as it relates to morality, Islam is far worse. So what's happening in these Islamic communities is the reason why the report that I shared on this program about a month ago that was conducted of U.S. Personnel stationed in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and particularly in Afghanistan, were so adverse to the Afghani people was because of their disgusting behavior, their treatment of women, and particularly Bachiba, desire of the Afghani army and police when they're put in charge of a community, a town, after the Taliban has been ousted by the Americans. They most universally, almost universally, go house to house, and they play like the mafia and say, if you don't want your house burnt down, you don't want your children killed, then you will pay us insurance. And with them being the ones that will burn it down and kill your children if you don't pay them. And then they will find the most attractive boys, young boys in the community, and they will rape them over and over again, hundreds and hundreds of times. And so that's the nature of the Afghani army. When they're not killing Americans, they're out savaging their own people. And so there's this realization that when America leaves, it will all collapse. And it will collapse suddenly, and the nation will be thrust back into civil war, and it will be otherwise as if we had never been there. The Afghani government, of course, labeled the predictions nonsense and garbage. Of course, they also want to have people believe that they're not plagued by financial fraud and that they haven't stolen America blind. Our nation, they said, was not born in 2002. We have a history of 5,000 years. There is no history of a Islamic state of Afghanistan that goes back any time beyond the Taliban. Reinforced by the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan following the American invasion. And, you know, the Taliban only goes back a matter of a couple of decades. And beyond that, it was a Soviet-backed government, and it only went back about a decade. And beyond that, it was just a whole host of warlords that took control of the region over time. There wasn't even an Islam 1,400 years ago, much less 7,000 years ago. The reality is that Afghanistan has, as a country, as a entity as it is today, does not have a history even approaching that length of time. But lies are what people use, particularly in politics. It says that we have fought against superpowers in our past, which, in other words, that the government of Afghanistan is saying that they're fighting against America. Imagine that. We are their financial support. I mean, that's what they're implying here. We have fought against superpowers in the past. And so he's saying that our national police and army are ready to defend the country's soul and sovereignty. They're ready for America to leave so long as we continue to send them weapons and money. And, of course, just as in the case of Vietnam, once we leave, because we're broke, we will stop sending them weapons and money, and they will collapse. And the first people killed will be those who are part of this government that we propped up, and they will be killed by the Taliban. And we will have a fundamentalist Islamic government over a nation, and we squandered 2,000 American lives and a couple of trillion dollars to accomplish that outcome. Well, that's the news for today. I'd like to transition back to the letter we were discussing during our program at the end of last week. For those who didn't have the opportunity to listen to us then, I'm going to share the beginning of the letter again, this time adding some things that I thought might be helpful to advance our understanding. It began with greetings. Thank you for having the guts to say what needs to be said. So many seem to run away and run for cover when it comes to discussing the truth about Islam. This is a Christian, ladies and gentlemen, who was really comfortable when I used evidence and reason and the Islamic scriptures to expose and condemn Islam. But the moment that I turned the attention to Christianity using the same tools, they cried foul. And so we'll consider this letter after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity.